Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And together we wrote with Stephen Slate that book, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap.
I have an exciting announcement to make, and that is we have decided to do another free live event. I have people coming in and asking me to gain access to the past free live events. You can email me and I will send you a link to be able to access those. And we're not going to be posting them on YouTube as a public thing, because there are people that ask questions in them. So we're not really comfortable doing that. But if you want to be able to see the free live event, the past ones, you have to email info@thefreedommodel.org. Let us know. But this new free live event is what we're going to focus on, is moving past guilt and shame, whether that's guilt and shame for your past behaviors or guilt and shame for trying to leave recovery. So it's called Moving Beyond Shame, Guilt, Addiction, and Recovery. You're moving beyond all of it.
Yeah, which is what true freedom is. Yeah. So we'll talk about that. We're also going to have a big announcement at that event as well.
Yes, we are. Exciting stuff.
We're kind of letting a little bit of the cat out of the bag on our Facebook group and page. Yeah. And we're getting a lot of feedback.
A lot of mixed emotions about it. A lot of people very excited. And that what we're going to talk about today is irrational fear. Okay. Just because a lot of people might be afraid of something doesn't mean the fear is necessarily rational.
Right. Or justified.
Or justified, right? So whenever we say anyone can moderate their substance use, I mean, the comments are, it creates such a fervor, because, you know, the first thing people want to say to us is, oh yeah, tell me how I can, moderate my heroin use, my fentanyl use, my crack use. Tell me how a true drunk, somebody who is killing themselves with alcohol, can have a cocktail at dinner. And yeah, we can tell you how that can happen, because the research shows that it can, and it does all the time.
Yeah. And a common theme too is all kinds of things get pulled into this. They say, you know, with overdoses being so high over the last, 10 years, don't you think it's irresponsible to say that a heroin user, for example, can moderate, or that they should, So I want to address that first and foremost, because that's the greatest fear. The greatest fear is dying. And people say, you're going to kill people with this, and they say some really mean things. But if that were true, it wouldn't be very mean. If it were accurate, it would be a warning.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to be responsible when you say that anybody can moderate. So this podcast is going to be about mitigating fear, right? So when we say anybody can moderate, we're not saying everybody should, number one.
Or anyone should, for that matter. Right. We don't know what's best for you. We have no idea.
So, but we're also responsible about the fact that the very first idea is you have to know the risks of moderate use. Yeah. So if you're the type of person who's getting high in an area where fentanyl is an issue, or with a drug supply, an illicit or black market drug supply, it may not be an option for you. You have to determine that level of risk, because moderate use can get you killed. Yeah. Just like, heavy use can get you killed, and everything in between. And so abstinence, maybe if that is your singular desire for a drug, and you say to yourself, I only like heroin and there's too much fentanyl around, I'm going to abstain. We celebrate that choice.
For sure.
So we're not saying you should moderate. We're saying you can, but you...
And people do.
And that it's a very common experience. But there are risks, right, associated with any use. So we're not saying that everybody should moderate. There are many situations where abstinence is the preferred path, just from a safety perspective. And of course, there's harm reduction where people switch to Suboxone or something like that instead of heroin. Sometimes that can work as a stopgap measure. That's awesome. And of course, we also address the detox issue as well.
Yeah.
So if you're using a drug where detox can be life-threatening, you know, just stopping can be life-threatening, you know, we advise talk to a physician. We're not physicians. You should probably talk to your doctor before you attempt any moderate use, because you could die. So,
well, I think there's a misunderstanding about moderation. Okay. Because in the 12-step world, in the addiction recovery space, instantly what people go to is, I'm going to moderate my drug of choice. Like, I am going to, you're telling me that I can moderate my drug of choice. The answer is yes. We're telling you, you could and can, you have the ability. But that's not necessarily what it might mean, because in the addiction recovery space, any use is seen as a problem. You're supposed to be abstinent from everything. Now, we know the reality of it is the vast majority of people that are sober in recovery are not abstinent. They're on all kinds of medications, right? They're prescribed all kinds of things nowadays. And ironically, and let me tell you something, when we went into the 12-step program, that was not acceptable.
Yeah, no, it
wasn't. People were told to get off all their medications.
And in some circles, that's still the case.
Yeah. And you're not really sober if you're even on any kind of medications. And I think it's a step forward to see that people are a lot of places are allowed to stay on their medications now. And we don't have a ton of AA sponsors playing doctor. I think that's a move in a positive direction. But that is what moderation means, is can I use a substance in moderation? If I had a heroin problem 10 years ago, and now I'm getting surgery, major surgery, can I go on an opiate and not have to worry about, you know, visiting my dealer on the street in a couple weeks? My old, you know, recontact.
No, that's a great point. So yeah. Let me talk a bit about that, because what you're doing is you're defining moderation there in a different way that might be helpful to people. So that's moderate use.
That is.
So taking a medication for pain, for example, is moderate use. That's one type. And in the book, we avoided the term moderation because it has so many strange connotations. So we said adjusting your use. Now, we're moving in the moderation direction as a term now and switching that up back to that term, because that's what people know. So we're going to be talking about moderating, adjusting, same thing. And we're going to talk about it in various ways. The other thing I wanted to say is, sometimes moderation can look like you're doing heroin and now I just want to smoke weed, or I just want to drink. And even if they're using pot heavily or drinking quite a bit, they feel that it's safer than what they were doing before. And it may be. You have to determine that. Maybe going to the bar is better than going to the crack house and getting robbed and maybe killed. Do you know what I mean? So moderation can mean a lot of things.
Right.
What we're talking about is fundamentally all of those factors we're going to discuss in what we're developing now with a moderation course. But also we're going to talk about the fact that you're entirely capable of it. That's the main thing, and that you don't have to be afraid of it.
That's it. You have been taught to be fearful of even the term moderation. That's an irrational fear. That fear comes from a place of propaganda. There is nothing. Alcohol is not going to, you know, jump off the shelf in the grocery store and jump down your throat and destroy your life. I mean, that's an irrational fear of alcohol. I can remember the first time I went to, it was probably 6 weeks in AA. And I remember going out to dinner in a place where alcohol was served and feeling like I was in danger, mm-hmm. you know, and where does that even come? That's so irrational, right? That I can't go into a place where alcohol is served. I have to be afraid that they might, like the chef might cook with alcohol. I have to be afraid when I'm at a potluck that somebody maybe made a dessert without, like, where does this come from? Well, it comes from propaganda, okay? From propaganda in the alcohol industry and the drug industry and the treatment industry.
It really emanated. It started in the treatment industry. It started with Bill Wilson personifying drugs. So let me talk about that for a bit. We've talked about this in other podcasts, but it's really important to know the roots of the mythology. Alcohol and drugs have always been seen as magical substances from one degree or another since their inception thousands of years ago. And so this is nothing new, but something changed in 1935.
Yeah.
And there was a switch that we went from understanding that substances created a funny feeling and perturbed the body. And then we got to interpret that sensation in sometimes religious ways, spiritual ways, and also to distract us from the doldrums of life. That's how it was seen prior to 1935, which is fairly accurate, right? You can use the drug experience for a lot of different things, but the term addiction or powerlessness or disease or illness or disorder never existed. Then in 1935, Bill Wilson comes along, the founder of AA, and says, alcohol, and this is the moment in history where we started to do a massive disservice to millions of people who would eventually die because of this misinformation. Because once you're in the misinformation, you can no longer see that you are the operative force in that relationship with the drug. Now the drug's in charge. And that moment was when Bill Wilson said, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Alcohol is cunning, meaning it has a mind. They personified the drug into having the power and the human as not. And when that switch happened, everything historically changed. An entire treatment industry blossomed around it. All kinds of fiction and fear became real to people. And now you have it where drugs and alcohol have all the power. There's the loss of control theory. And now we've furthered it into, it has the ability to go into your brain and change the way you think, knock down your ability for impulse control. You're fucked. I mean, there's no way to get by it. So that's where things changed. And that's where the fear comes from.
And I want to point something out about what you just said. Is it better to tell people the truth that these drugs don't have power, that you are powerful and you have the ability to choose? Or is it better to say, if you even ingest an ounce of this, you will be out of control?
Yeah. So,
and, I mean, which is more dangerous?
Right. I mean, it's very obvious. Now, to somebody who's been indoctrinated in the treatment recovery revolution, which is, you know, millions and millions of people, what is ignored, and I want to say this to the skeptics of what we're talking about here, what is ignored are the millions of people who just move past these problems without any formal treatment or anything. And I know that what you're going to say is, well, they're not real alcoholics, they're not real drug addicts. That's a real common, is also emanates from Bill Wilson's fantasy. In AA, the founder of AA, he created the real alcoholic identity. It's made up.
And you can't go back, right? Like, that's not how research works. You arbitrarily go back and throw something out
That doesn't fit your narrative.
That doesn't fit your narrative. That's not how research works. When we talk about the vast majority of people, right, and over 90% solve, let's specifically talk about alcohol. Over 90% specifically solve an alcohol problem as a function of age and time. And these are people that at some point in their lives fit the criteria for alcohol use disorder. The real alcoholic is a straw man. The real alcoholic doesn't exist.
Right.
Okay, there's no such thing. People either fit the criteria for alcohol use disorder. We'll go with that. We'll say we'll throw, you know, science a bone and say that exists. It doesn't, but we'll say it does. And so you can't have it both ways, because people that fit that criteria, more than 50%, don't fit the criteria anymore, but they're not abstinent.
Right. So they've moderated.
They've moderated successfully.
And 80% of them never went to any formal treatment. So if you have this drinking demographic of heavy users worldwide, and 90%, the other 41% abstain for life. So you have 9% of the people that had alcohol use disorder over a lifetime that keep that sort of thing going on in their life. So are we going to just ignore the 91% that moved on? Yes, that's exactly what happens. It gets completely discounted like it doesn't exist. The 9% is the real alcoholic. No, they're just people that prefer heavy use till they die.
Yeah.
You know, but are you going to discount the 91% of what if the guy or gal that, let's say that there's 30% of them that drink more than the 9%, because we know there are massive heavy users that age out. We know this.
Yeah.
So your narrative that the 9% are the real alcoholic or the real drug addict is bullshit.
Yeah.
We also know that the 9%, some of them are just barely fit the criteria all
That's
the way.
That's right.
To
they just maybe consistent drinkers. Right. I mean, the criteria is at one of the reasons we say it doesn't exist at all is
the real alcoholic
or even alcohol use disorder.
Right.
I mean, I want to go there and say that doesn't even exist because the criteria is a moving target. Okay. There are people that have problems in their lives, lots of problems, and just happen to also be drinkers, right? Somebody that gets one DUI because they got drunk at a party, drove home and crashed their car would fit the criteria, okay? Like somebody that drinks, gets really hammered 6 times a year would fit the criteria. Somebody that drinks 2 drinks every single night fits the criteria. So this is a very broad thing. And
then there's equally those that are massive users. Both demographics age out.
They all do.
But you know, so right, everybody from the hardest core all the way to the person that just barely fits their criteria.
And most of them age out by age 35 years old. Okay. So there's a whole demographic of very heavy users from the age of 16 right through to like 26, 25, 26 years old. And then different things become important in your lives and you age out of that behaving that way. It's very acceptable to behave that way when you're a teenager and an early adolescent, like our early 20s.
Yeah, it's
person.
Accepted behavior to be a jackass at the bar. It's not when you're 50 and you know, running a company or whatever and your kids are around. So the point of this whole discussion is it's very irrational to be fearful of something that is incredibly common, is a positive experience, is generated by the mind of the individual freely. And improves the life of that person. The only reason if you recoil from it is because you've been duped into believing that alcohol and drugs have some capacity to overtake your free will.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's just mythology. So in our book, we cover this in a whole bunch of different ways, in a whole bunch of different chapters. And it's covered in masterful detail. I mean, it's awesome. People read the book and they're just blown away. So yes, anybody can moderate. But if you are fearful, the level, and I did this, I did this in a couple of videos. If I were to say to you right now, you can moderate at any given point to non-problematic levels, and your life can move in a very positive direction because of that. And you can do it easily. And your first reaction is, that's bullshit. And you become fearful at the thought of it because you start thinking, oh, maybe I could moderate. I kind of like that. Oh my God, I can't think that. The level to which you have that fear or recoiling is commensurate, is proportional to the amount of mythology and irrational fear you're carrying because of mythology, because of misinformation. That's the level of myths that you're carrying. Now, there's 23 main myths that we're going to cover, and we cover in the book as well. We cover many more, about 50. But 23 are the real kickers. And if you recoiled at what I just said in a massive way, you probably believe most of them. And I wouldn't advise ever moderating if you carry that fear, because you're never going to be successful at it, because you actually believe that your free will is biohacked.
Yeah.
So if you believe that, why would you ever attempt moderating? So when we're on Facebook and people complain and say, and they come back with, you know, some sort of insult or fear-based, I said, don't moderate.
Don't. It's obviously not right for you.
Yeah. If you don't believe you can, then you can't. But that's not because you objectively can't. It's because you believe you can't.
That's right.
Because your beliefs, which are myths, which are not objectively true, your beliefs are holding you back.
But what about, you know, when I was in AA, what about all those people that go back out and die? Well, you're seeing a fraction of the entire sample size, okay? And you're focusing in on the people that, number one, have been indoctrinated into the idea that they will, jails, institutions, and death, if they leave meetings, they'll drink again or use drugs again, and they will either go to jail, end up in and back in rehab, or die. Okay. So there's this, that whole thing that is a self-fulfilling prophecy if you really have that belief system. But you're discounting the vast majority that leave meetings and you never hear from them again because they're doing fine.
That's right. That's right. So it really is a case of, if you concentrate on seeing red cars, you'll see every red car around you. It's we've talked about it in a lot of podcasts, confirmation bias, all these different terms. But what happens is, humans have, and we're notorious for this, we see what's right in front of us, and then we extrapolate that idea into a worldview. So what I see in America is American values and a very free life, and I love living here. But when I go to a different country, a third world country, it's very hard for me to understand what is happening until I spend a week there and I go, oh, this makes logical sense. Mm-hmm. But so it's very easy for you, if you're frightened, to only see what you have been taught to see.
That's right.
You've been taught to see it as a cunning, baffling entity.
Yeah.
So if your entire foundation is predicated on alcohol having the power and you not, and that your brain is susceptible, and that your brain makes thought, and that it's susceptible to the influence, right? I'm under the influence of alcohol. Think about the terminology we use, and that you need to get clean, right? As if you're dirty, and you should feel guilty about it. So all of these beliefs start to become your truth.
Yeah.
So most of what we do, both in the book and in this new course that we're developing for moderation, is debunking all of that for you to see truly what you are, which is a free will driven person, individual. And you have the capacity to think for yourself, and the alcohol can't do it for you. It doesn't change you. It doesn't make decisions for you. That's all you. Your impulse control is fine. You just happen to like getting hammered. And some of that is based on substance mythology.
Yes.
So we have to go through and deal with all the substance mythology, all the benefits that are cooked in by the booze and drug cartels.
You know, it's so interesting because, when we first went to AA, I didn't understand why anybody would only have a drink or two. I didn't understand using drugs in moderation. I had quit using drugs because I was a daily drug user 6 months before I quit drinking. And so I did not understand the entire concept of moderation because of the drug and alcohol mythology that I believed, right? Like, what is the point of having a glass of wine? What is the point? You feel nothing. And so I didn't understand that. And I think a lot of our skeptics and the people that have this fear are so bought into the substance mythology there is no good reason to drink alcohol. There's no good reason.
Right. Unless you're going to drink 20.
Exactly. And that's the level of the mythology you believe. I mean, so the question I came to mind when Mark was talking was, so what's your point? Like, why is it bad that people are fearful of this? And well, there's a lot of bad in this kind of irrational fear and these kinds of beliefs, because we see it all the time. We see people who get 20 years, 10, 5, 10, 20 years abstinence, you know, in recovery. They may not be going to meetings anymore. Maybe they stopped going to meetings 5 years ago. But the shit hits the fan in their life. And boy, does that drink look good. Looks appetizing.
Because they didn't challenge.
Yeah.
They didn't challenge the benefits that they learned from alcohol marketing campaigns.
That's right. That are going on to this day, by the way.
Yeah. So if you still believe in substance mythology.
And addiction mythology, right? Because you think, oh, wow, this is stinking thinking. Maybe they go back to a meeting, but they feel compelled. And you start creating what you fear, what you're focused on. You're so focused on the fear, I'm going to relapse. My life is good now, and I don't want to lose that. But, things are really hard right now. And getting drunk feels like it'd be the right thing, right? So when you get rid of all the substance mythology, you get rid of all the addiction mythology, you never have that struggle ever again. It never happens.
Because you finally understand that alcohol doesn't contain pleasure.
No.
Or heroin.
Relief.
Or methamphetamine, whatever. Relief or escapism. That's the big one. The escapism.
Big one,
because
especially as you get older.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there are other things, legitimate things to fear as you get older. You don't need to fear substances.
That's right.
You know,
and you also don't need to build them up into these magical experiences either. So there's two sides to this coin. We have to get rid of addiction and recovery mythology, but we also have to get rid of the overblown substance mythology, the overblown idea that it's this magical experience, a magic carpet ride.
Yeah, it's not that either.
Yeah. And so there are many things that you can use as a distraction in life to get away from the doldrums of the challenges of being a human being. And alcohol and drugs don't have to be the thing. The other thing is, by building them up in this way, you end up really valuing them. So then moderate use, like to Michelle's point, looks totally unattractive. So in the course, we're going to do what we do in the book, which is we're going to slowly, through truth and understanding, devalue and debunk all the mythology around the benefits of substances that are overblown and borderline ridiculous, you know, yeah. But they're all things that we believe too.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't a single thing in that book that we didn't believe and have to look at and challenge and analyze and then go, holy shit, I didn't know what the facts were on that. That's amazing. So what I thought was bullshit. Yes, it was bullshit. Oh my God. So I don't have to believe this anymore. I don't have to believe in this just extremely blown up version of heroin anymore. No, you don't have to.
No. No, you don't have to walk around fearful, because I mean, I heard somebody have, I heard this conversation. I think it was in the grocery store or something. And somebody was talking about, well, you know, alcohol is everywhere and it's in everything. And we still have such an alcohol culture, and it's why it's so hard for people that are trying to be sober. And it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be hard.
No.
Because it's not, I mean, I rarely drink, and it's just not a thought in my head. I don't see it on movies, or like, I don't even notice. It doesn't occur to me to be fearful in my life on a day-to-day basis that this is gonna, somehow it's gonna take over my life. And there was a time in my life when it was the most important thing. I drank from morning till night. It was the most important thing in my life. So yeah, you can change all that. You can let it totally go. And when you see it for what it is, it's nothing really.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you want to come to our next free live event, it's Thursday, September 17th. At noon Eastern time. So it's 12 Eastern time, which is about 5 p.m. in the UK, 9 a.m. on the West Coast of the US. And everybody else can just work it out from there. And you can go to right in our mobile app. You can find it in the mobile app right now. Once Ryan gets back from vacation, there'll be a pop-up on our site, and that'll be at the end of this week. Probably by the time this comes out, there'll be a pop-up on our site. You can just go to thefreedommodel.org, or you can find it on our Facebook. There's an event on Facebook that has an external link that you can enroll through Facebook. So you find our Facebook page, find our free live event on there, and lots of ways to enroll.
All right, everybody.
All right. We hope to see you at the live event.
See you there.
Don't forget, if you like our podcast, like, share, tell your friends about it. The Addiction Solution. Thanks so much, everybody.